You're listening to STLYA, a youth-led podcast committed to helping discover insightful cultural perspectives. In the first episode of the new series, Korean Immigrants in STL, we talk to Kimmy Foster. She shares the formative experiences that led her to rise from being a window teller to the position of vice president at a bank, and what motivated her to work hard to overcome language barriers and cultural differences. Could you start by stating your name and when and where you were born?
Okay, my Korean name is Hye-suk. It's H-Y-E-S-U-K, Kim. Kim was my maiden name. And when I married my husband, obviously American system, they take a husband's name, which is a Foster, because my husband was a Foster. Now, when he passed away nearly 40 years ago, 38 years already, I could have changed back my name to Kim. But to changing the name was so much paperwork. I'm not kidding you. It was so much paperwork, all the credit card, the driver license, his military records, and all this. I just decided to keep it, and I'm still keeping his name. So it's a Foster, F-O-S-T-E-R.
All right, thank you. And where were you born?
I was born in Korea. It's Cholla province. Oh, wait a minute. No, I'll take it back. I was born in Seoul. In 1947, so that was, 3 years before Korean War began. So I don't remember anything for the Korean War. I was just too little. But I was born there, and then when the war broke, we moved back to the south where grandparents are living. That's where the Cholla-bukdo province. So, which is very nearly to the south side of Korea. And I stayed there until, I think it's about third grade. And then I moved back to the Seoul and started fourth grade elementary school. And then I finished all my education in Seoul.
Gotcha. So you did your college and
yeah, I went there. The school over there is a lot of American kids don't understand. Even my grandkids don't understand. We had a school for 7 days, 6 days, so Monday through Saturday. Mm-hmm. And the Saturday was half a day. And half a day, what you think is half a day, I was totally. We went to school almost a full day. That was a half a day on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. So, what kind of differences do you see in that education there and what you might see now with maybe your grandparents or whatnot?
Well, you know,
I mean,
what?
Grandchildren, sorry.
Yeah, very different, and that kind of shocked me when I came to the United States, because when I came to the United States, and then I didn't work right away, and then I was just sitting in the front porch, and all this school bus by, I said, wow, what a nice country that is. You know, I remember how I went to school. We don't have a school bus, whether it's a private or public school, no school bus. So you have to catch whether it's a public bus. And I call it, my husband called it sardine. You know how the little sardine in the can, how they pack it really tight? And so my husband used to call the Korean bus, or just sardine in the pack. Because, you know, it was so packed. And by the time when I get up, my hair is all messed up. I lost the button on my uniforms and just no room to move around. So that's kind of a school that we were. And then after you get off the bus, you walk another 3-4 miles to get to the school. But nobody complained, because that's how it was.
Right.
So I'm sitting in the front porch in the United States. Everything was so, you know, strange to me, everything I see. And then I see all these kids get off the school bus. I don't see anybody carrying the heavy bag we used to carry. I mean, we had so many books and then homework to do. And then carry that sometimes we take a lunch and a dinner because the school get out so late. And I said, oh my God, number one, bus come pick them up front of the house, take them to school, and then they drop them off right at the school, and I don't see anybody carrying the really heavy bag, you know, the book bag. So I asked one of the neighbor kids, I said, do you guys ever have any homework to do? I don't see any books. He goes, oh, after school, we put all the books in the locker. I said, so how do you homework? Well, we don't have homework, we do it at the school. I said, wow, what a country this is. You know, that was pretty shock to me. Hmm. You know, that was very shock to me. I said, wow, this is heaven. Why do, you know, that was the very first thing that I noticed that for the school difference. And it's so different. And then in Korea, when you finish the school, now you have a janitor, right? Janitor clean the room, whatever. Mm-hmm. We were the janitor. After school's done, we were actually bring the some, you know, the towels and wax and bring it to the school. Because we don't wear the shoes, so we have a shoes bag. Everybody put the shoes in the shoe bag and we walk around with the socks and whatever. We had to clean that floor. Every day after school's over, we push up all the chairs on one side. I don't know. I think your mom doesn't even remember. She's too young for that. And then we all lined up like military people. We swear, you know, the sweep the floor, clean it up, and when it dry, we wax. And then we use a dry towel, so it's a shiny. We did that. We didn't have a janitor. And if you're bad, get in trouble, the punishment was cleaning the toilet. That was our punishment. Now, you do that here, you know, school's gonna get several $1 million losses. Or somebody gonna get fired.
Yeah.
But you know what, we didn't complain. But when I look back, school was like a military to me. We didn't have open school. Then you go in the gate, when the school starts, the gate is locked. There is a gate guard. Make sure you have, if you don't have a pass, you cannot get out of school. And then we had a barbed wire fence on the, 8-foot walls around the school. So when I tried to tell my grandkids, Ella and Julia, they said, oh, Grandma, you're just making up the story. They don't believe it. Because I don't even think they can even imagine that. What is school is have a barbed wire fence and you cannot get out of school and things like that. But that's how it was. So school was very different.
So when was it that you finally came to America? Do you remember how old you are?
I was 25 years old.
And when you came here, was that, you were telling me earlier about the bank teller job, is that when you first got that job, or what was the process like looking for that?
Well, my husband didn't want me to work. He said he make enough money. So I didn't bring you here for you to go to work. I brought you to the United States because first of all, you wanted to come to the United States and I make enough money to support both of us. That was before Sally was born. And why do you want to work? He said, I would just stay home, just take care of me. And you know, you don't have to go to work. But I had a different purpose because in 1973, Korea was just still, I would say, underdeveloped country, but it was poor. So I had, even though nobody pressured, I had a family obligation that I felt that I have to go work, make money, and I send it to my family so they can buy food and whatever. Well, my husband did not understand that, you know. Because I didn't tell him that, because it was kind of embarrassing to tell him I have to go to work, make money, send it to my family so they can feed themselves. So he kind of was told me, you don't have to go to work. I don't want you to go to work. But I had to go to work. So eventually I convinced him. And so he said, okay, then you can just work with his office as a part-time. So I started working part-time, and we only had one car. So I had to go work with him, come home together, whatever. And my job at the time, I worked in the morning about 2-3 hours, and then take a break. In the afternoon, I worked about 2-3 hours. So I had like a 3 hours in between. I was just doing nothing. But I didn't have a car, so I couldn't come home. So I had to stay there with him. Well, that kind of thinking, I said, so wait a minute. Because there was, the places work was a military base. It's a PX, BX. It's like a store.
So what was your husband's occupation?
He was a supervisor. He was a supervisor. And he was a very kind of a, he was an American man, but his mind was somehow is the very Oriental. The man has to support the family. A woman should not work. He can support the family. And so having me working there, it was just sort of like to hurt his pride, you know. So I think he said, well, you know, what does the people think that I have to, you know, let my wife work in? I said, you know, so anyway, we had kind of a lot of argument over that. One time I told him I'm going back to Korea because I can't live with him, so whatever. But he kind of gave into that then. So I said, wait a minute, I'm staying here for 3 hours doing nothing, I don't get paid. So I went to his boss. I said, you know what, as you know, I'm here in the base all day long because we come together. I said, I need something and get paid. So he said, you know, Kimmy, I don't mind you working all day full time. You have to convince your husband because he's the one don't want you to work. So anyway, so I came home and we had a huge argument. I told him, unless you allow me to work full day, I'm going back to Korea. That was my weapon. As soon as I said I'm going back to Korea, he said he gave in. So finally he let me work full time. So I was working at the military base and the PX for, let's see, about maybe 2 years, I think. And then my daughter was born. So I had to stay home for, you know, about 6 months with the child. So, and I said, okay, it's time for me to go back to work because I need the money. So I need to go back to work. And they already replaced my position there and I didn't have a place there. So I started looking at the newspaper. That time, everybody gave me a newspaper. We don't get a newspaper these days. Everything is digital. But everybody was getting newspaper. So I'm reading newspaper and I'm trying to find a job. And I saw that the bank was looking for, you know, the person. I have no idea what was a teller, because we don't call it teller in Korea. So I went there. Oh, by then I had my own car. So we didn't have a GPS then. So I just kind of, everybody carried the map. You go through the map and find the place. So I went to the bank and I told them I want to apply for the job. So they gave me the application, employment. So I filled it in. And they said, oh, we'll review to this and we'll call you, let you know. So they called me back a week later. I said, so we are interested in hiring you, so why don't you come in the interview? So I did. And so I went through the, you know, what I did in Korea and da-da-da-da. So they said, well, we'll be interested in hiring you, but as a teller. So somehow the Korean people, we don't want to look stupid. So I didn't even know what the teller was. I was carrying the dictionary translated. So I said, okay. So came home, look at the teller, find out that's the person working at the, you know, the window with the customer. So I got the job. Regardless, I got the job. And the Korean people are very, we have our work ethics very strong and very honorable. So I was always never late for my work, never late for my work. And I always do more than what I supposed to. I help other people. So anyway, sooner or later, customers start, you know, giving me regret. Oh, she's a super, she's fast, she never make a mistake, always just count right to the penny. So, you know, the people start saying that to the human resource, so they start hearing their feedback. So I was in the window 6 months and they said, okay, it's time for you to come back inside. So when I came back inside, like I said, we had a 19 window, and I'm the only Korean. So that was a different when I came inside, because now customer come directly to my window, looking at my face. Everybody is an American. So first, at the time, we had a huge cut at this Monsanto company, was our huge company that was, and every Friday there was payday. So at the time, bank was, most of all the bank was closed at 2 o'clock. Monday through Thursday. Friday was the only day we work until 7 p.m. Pretty much every bank was. And then no Saturday banking, none so ever. So I'm going inside and everybody busy, but my window has no customer. They don't want to come to my window because I guess they looked at drive-up windows are different because there's the most customer, you know, have a restaurant, whatever store, they had a lot of cash, they want to deposit it and then go to work. So there was not really much of an issue. As long as I count their money correctly, give their credit receipts and fast because they're in rushing time. Well, inside was just totally different. Now people coming inside, everybody was busy, but my windows, nobody come because of the, I guess they figure, does she know how to count? I guess that's what they think. You know, what does she know? Will she speak English to me or whatever? So they had a lot of doubt. So since I don't have anything else to do, I went to the next window, help the other teller counting the money and, you know, try to help and then go to the next window help. So people see that, what I do. And then the bank was closed at 2 o'clock. We have to, you know, do the balance my window. And at the time, we almost had over $100,000 cash, everybody. Now, these days, you go there, you don't even have a $5,000 window. But at the time, we had carried $100,000 cash at every window. So when we balanced at 2 o'clock, my daughter was a baby, so I wanted to go home fast as I could. But I can't, even though I balance right to the penny, if somebody else don't balance, we have to wait until everybody balances. The reason is that because each teller sell the money, buy the money each other. That happens every day. So even if I balance, I have to wait everybody balance, then we can go home. So when I balance, I'm the first one to balance. I go next window, count the money, try to help them too, you know. And then when they finish, I go next window. So they can see me. Okay, she's fast. She doesn't hardly ever make a mistake. The customers that come to me, customers say, she's really nice and she's really accurate. And she's very kind to the people. So this kind of a nice feedback going to the management office. So I came inside the window about 6 months later. And then soon I got promoted as assistant head teller. There was a lot of jealousies at the time. I know that when this particular person, I don't want to name them, she was just saying, well, how come you become an assistant head teller? I've been here for nearly 10 years, I'm still teller. Well, you know, I said, I don't know, that's not up to me. So she was very jealous. So I tried to kind of reason with her, but she was just did not get through to her. So I finally decided to just ignore her. But then I said, okay, I need to move up. So by then anyway, for within a year, I was, you know, move up to twice already. And then some people jealous and some congratulating and what have you. So I finally went to the human resources office. Oh, that was by then, while I worked there, my husband passed away. So now I need more income, you know. So I went to the human resources office and said, what do I have to do to get promoted for the better position with the better pay? And they said, Marlene, she was a very sweet lady. She said, Kimmy, we will send you to the school. Bank pay for the tuition, except that you just have to use your time in the evening to go to school. And that was called the banking, the InstaBank. Institute of Banking, something like that, was a downtown office, and that's all they teach, nothing but a banking business. I learned a lot from there. But the thing is, my report card doesn't come to me, it goes to the bank, because the bank pays for my tuition. So if I get like a C and D and F, I have to pay back. I have to get an A and B to bank keep paying for this. So in order for me to not to pay back, I mean, there was a lot of strange language there. I mean, every day I'm looking at the dictionary, and I think I spent more time to just try to translate in the dictionary. So I was really slow compared to other American people in the classroom. But regardless, I made it through. So when you do that, report card goes to the bank, and the graduation certificate goes to the bank. So they know what I did. So I just started moving up a little bit. While doing that, my husband passed away. So I told the bank, and then I was there nearly about, I guess about 10 years by then. I said, okay, I cannot make a living for myself and my daughter. I have to do something else with a better income. So I decided to go business. What do I know about the business? Don't know anything about it. But I just had this, because I was still not 40 yet, so I said, I gotta do something. So I decided to go open the, like a subway, I guess, you know, these days. It's not franchised, but it was owned in the downtown Clayton. Anyway, less than a year, I lost everything. Less than a year, I lost everything. So, what do I know? I decided to go back to bank. But my pride would not let me go back to the first bank because they tried to tell me not to go open your business, just stay in the bank. If you're stressed out, use your vacation, use your sick days, and if you're still stressed out, take off about a month without pay. They were super, super, super nice bank. And I just couldn't. I said, no, I'm going to make a lot of money if I go into business. And that's how naive I was. So anyway, less than a year, I lost everything. So I decided to go back to bank, and I went to the second bank, and I think it was like a landmark bank. Now I don't know what the bank, because they change the name all the time. And I went there, and didn't last too long because I couldn't get along with the there was just so much jealousy there by then, that bank, for some reason. So while I'm there, I was still looking for another bank, and I found the, I guess, number three bank. And so I went there and worked at the teller there. And it was a small branch office. And there was an opportunity came, the manager was leaving the bank. So I said, okay, I'm going to see whether I can qualify for that job. So I went to the management. I said, I know, you know, manager, Mr. Manager's leaving. I would like to put it in for the position. And they said, well, most of management position they require for the, at least, you know, the master's degree. So I said, which I didn't have. So I said, okay, then I would like to go, you know, go get my master's degree, and could you pay for it? And the bank said, well, you're doing a really great job. We get a lot of good compliments from customers and then you know, whatever. What do we gonna get out of you even if we spend the money on you for the you know, master's degree? What can we get from you? Now, bank was not really a big bank. It was a family-owned bank from 100 years, and so grandfather, and whatever. So I said, okay, there's a limit on this bank, how I can grow. Because they refused to pay my, you know, the master's degree that I wanted to go to. So while I'm there, I was there, I guess, nearly 4 years. I started looking for another bank. I said, okay, I need to find a different bank. So every lunch hour, looking at the paper, I applied for the different, you know, bank. And finally, I got in touch with the one of the bank, which was big bank. And of course, a friend of mine was a really knew that system BP, assistant chairman of that. And so he kind of, you know, give the bridge there. So put the word for me. So they called me and said, so we would like to meet you. So I said, I have to come to my lunch hour because I'm still working at this bank and I don't want anybody to know I'm looking for another job. So they said, okay, come on over your lunch hour. So I went to one of my lunch hour and had a meeting with, interview with them. And they said, okay. And they told me, if we hire you, what would you expect from the bank? I said, I have three things I wanted to ask. First of all, I wanted to go get my master's degree. So I want a bank pay for my tuition. Number two, I know there is no management position or whatever, so I'll start working whatever the position you offer me. But later, if that management position is open, I would like to give me the chance to apply for. Number three, at the time, a lot of Asian American in St. Louis area, which speak very poor English, they don't know anything about the banking system, and they couldn't finance anything from the bank because they have no credit history, most of them, because they all self-financing, okay? So I would like to use our bank and open the door for the Asian banking because I speak bilingual. Of course, I only speak Korean, not the Chinese or whatever, but anyway, so I would like to introduce our bank to the Korean American Association, have them to come to use our bank. So we have a deposit grow, we have more customer, we can make a loan. However, there will be some issue to making a loan to the Korean American people because they have no credit history. They buy everything cash. So when you're looking at the credit history, there's nothing. And they actually, no credit history is worse than having a bad credit, because bad credit, you know what kind of person that is. You don't make a loan payment. But the no credit, you cannot really judge the people. Is this a credit worth people or is it not credit worth people? So I told them it would be hard to start making a loan, but we can start with a small amount, like, you know, the maybe automobile loan, maybe you know, something small. And but I will pre-interview these people, find out what kind of people they are. And if they are credit-worthy people and will be good customer, then I would like to recommend a letter for these people. And if I submit it, I want the bank to approve the loan. So I suggested three things. So they said, okay, then here, we'll, we have three conditions for you too. Which making a deal, basically. And okay, we'll send you the, you know, master's degree. But condition you have to get A and B. You cannot get a C, D, F, and fail. So you have to pay that. And the second one was, we will consider if there's a management position come up, we will consider you, but we cannot guarantee. Number three, yeah, we'd like to open the banking to the Asian community here, and we want you to be started something for that matter, like an Asian banking committee. So I said, okay. So they said, when can you start the work? I said, well, I have to give them 2 weeks notice with the other bank. So as soon as I go there, that was a Friday, I think. I said, I'll give them 2 weeks notice next Monday, and as soon as that 2 weeks over, I'll be coming over. So that was the agreement. So I went back to work, and immediately I submitted my resignation to the bank I was working in. And then the whole bank was upside down. The chairman came to my branch Monday, chairman and the president came and wanted to know why I'm leaving, and you know, you're doing a good job, customers are happy. I said, you know what, I gave you the opportunity, I wanted to go to school so I can move to the, now banking at the time, now this is different now, but at the time there's a banking, it's a two section. One is retail banking, the other is lending. Retail is where the people come and make a deposit and use the bank, use that money to lend the money. So banking is that, that's what the banking business was. You borrow, people bring the deposit money, bank use that money to lend it out and they charge the interest. So pretty much by then I was, there's nothing for me to learn anymore the retail section. I wanted to move to the lending department. There was predominantly was male. There was some, but not too many women working at the lending department. But that's the where you loan the banking. So they want to know why I decided to leave the bank. So I told them I wanted to go get my higher education. You guys didn't want to pay for it. And, you know, so I gave them my reason. And they said, well, we should we want you to change your mind. I said, no, I can't do that. I already promised to do the other bank. I'm giving you 2 weeks notice, I'm leaving. So I did. So when I moved to the final bank that I worked there, which was a great bank, and the chairman and vice chairman, everybody was just so super understanding, just was as nice as possible. So if somebody wants to do banking, I'm not so sure your mom wants to work at the bank. However, if your purpose is a moving after the management, you have to know the whole situation, what's going on. Okay. When I was a manager at the bank, I can look at the teller over there and just looking at her face, I know what she was doing. And that is because I start working from the bottom. I know the system of teller. I know how the people steal it. I know how, there is way, you know. But it doesn't last long. If you have a black, I always say, if you have a black thumb, meaning steal the bank money, eventually they will find it. It may not take, right away. Because banking is everything is traceable. Everything. So, it may be less, maybe a little bit longer than sure or whatever, but eventually you will get caught. So, if I didn't go through the teller, the working at the teller, I would probably have no idea what they do, how to, So, that was my banking career, and I was there like 23 years.
Yeah, so with a lot of the banks you're talking about, people having jealousy and things like that, and you were the only woman, and I'm guessing also only Asian as well, one of the only.
Well, there's one story that I forgot to tell you. There was the bank that who refused to send me to the master's degree, and there was one girl. She was, I guess, I was still young then. She was probably about maybe 10 years older than me. Maybe she was American. And she was so negative about foreigners, they call foreigners, which I was foreigners. And she could not understand why I keep moving up and she started to tell her. And she was, everything that I do, she was always just have a negative impact, negative feedback. So I finally told her, I said, let's just talk, find out what's the problem here. So we went to the conference room, and I asked her, her name is Barbara, I said, what is the problem that you have with me? Besides, I know you don't like me, but besides that, let's just set aside, what is the issue here? And first she said, well, I don't have any issues, and da-da-da-da. I said, I know you do. I said, there's nobody in the room, just you and me. So let's open it up. If I can help you, I'll help you. If I cannot help you, then I will see what you want. Maybe I'll transfer you to the different the branch who can help you or make you happy. So finally she said, I just don't understand that. She says, I was born in this country and I'm American, and then you come from another country and you keep moving up and I'm still in the same place. So I finally told her, Barbara, here's the issue. Bank closes at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock. I know, but 10 minutes before bank closes, you already start, get your purse ready and, get ready to go, leave here. Now, I don't do that. Bank closes, sometimes we have a late customer, which I take care of them. And even after bank closes, there's a lot of things to be done. You don't even give a 1 minute your time to the bank. And also, when you go home, what do you do? Well, it's none of your business. So no, I want to help you. Because I'm in the position I can help you. But if you don't open up to me, I don't know what's the problem. Well, I go home and cook my husband and, take care of my families and all this stuff. I said, you know what? And then watch TV, whatever. I said, this is what I do when I get home. When I get home, I had like 3 other jobs, a part-time job. If I don't go another job, I go to school, and I try to advance myself, which you don't. And that's what the difference is. I don't see you have a desire to improve yourself or moving up, advance yourself. Nobody gonna give that to you. I work very hard, spend all my evening trying to what can I do to improve myself. And that's what the difference is. So I tell you what, bank pays for the tuition. So why don't you go to bank? Why don't you go to school? He said, I'm not going to school. I'm done better than that. I said, well, you know what? I think that's the problem because you don't really try to advance yourself. You're very happy what you are. You're just jealous because I'm moving up and you're in the same place. So since you don't want to go to school and we don't get along, so why don't I'm going to put up the transfer request for transfer to another department, another branch. Maybe you'll be happy. Maybe you'll get along fine. So, but you know, believe it, she, a couple of days she was kind of mad at me, but eventually she came around. She was super nice. I taught her to, you know, what she was. Now, when I hire people, you kind of see some people, person A is very smart, but very, I cannot dependable, always show up late, come up with all kind of an issue not to show up at work. But person B is kind of slow, but I can depend on. She will show up, you know. And then third person, so everybody, third person might be very good at organizing things, but not good at numbers. So everybody has a different
skill set.
Yeah, different skills that I can rely on it. So most person that on my bottom list is very smart, but I cannot depend on it. Those people, I can, if the body is not there, work. It's a useless person to me. But if that person is a little slow, a little bit less smart, I can teach them and make a better person. Because always show up work, never late. I can depend on that person. If somebody is real good at numbers, I know where I can use that person. Somebody really good organizer, I have a job for them too. So you gotta use those. Everybody's some kind of a talent, you know? So I learned a lot how handling the people, that too, learned a lot. Which really helped me later when I work, serve as a Korean American Association. I learned a lot from the bank and I used the skill with the Korean people. That's why they cannot look down at me in Korean American Association, all these guys.
Yeah, so it sounds like to me that you were that dependable person in the banking.
I am very dependable.
Okay.
So, you know why? Because I had to. Nobody support me. I had to support myself. So if I'm lazy and always excuse not to show work, who's going to hire me?
Yeah.
I have to do more than what they expect me to do and without pay. So, and you know what? When you do that, you if your work ethic is good, somebody will be notice you. Somebody eventually. That was like February or something, we had really, I mean, in San Francisco, we had a really ice storm. There's not a car running. And I had to go open the bank because I had the key to it. And I don't know how I made it to the bank, but however, I mean, now I can drive in the snow, but on the ice, I'm not kidding, there's nobody was on the street. So I made it to the bank, even though it was late. I opened the bank, nobody showed up. I was the only person. So I called this one person, I told the dependable, I said, you have to come to the bank because I'm by myself. So she said, I'll be right there. I asked my husband to bring me. So her and I was the two person, we operate the bank that day. I guess I had a good excuse not to show up because you know, there is no customer that day. However, banking is a public place, so they have to open it. So, following week, I got, you know, special bonus from bank president was how, you know, dependable person I was, and it was really appreciated. So, rather than come up with the excuse, that is my work ethic, even these days. There's two kind of people that I don't like it and I don't associate it. That goes with my own family. Number one, people never keep up with time. They late, They say they're going to be here at 5 o'clock. I expected to be here at 5 o'clock. Unless, you know, there could be accident, highways closed or whatever. Call me. Instead of sitting me here waiting for you without no phone calls, not no, I don't wait for the people more than 15 minutes. That's my rule. If you don't show up in 15 minutes, don't expect to find me there. I'll be gone. And that goes with my daughter too. She's a terrible person to keeping the time with my son-in-law and everything. I mean, if they said they'll be here 5 o'clock, might as well be here 5:30, 6 o'clock. I finally decided not to wait for them anymore. So that's number two people. I don't like the lazy people. Lazy people. Those are two, I mean, I don't know, because maybe I had to live last 40 years without my husband. I had to, everything I had to do, I have to produce, I have to do, I have to depend myself. I guess maybe I'm expecting too much, I don't know. But because my, those are two things, my work ethics, I always do more than what the people expect of me doing it. Okay, you don't want to pay, that's fine. But that's just my personality. Eventually you get it all back. And somebody will recognize you and reward you for that. So even these days, I told my daughter, what time you'll be here? Well, I'll be there at 3 o'clock. Don't expect me if you don't show up in 15 minutes, so you won't find me here.
Yeah, so with that work ethic you were talking about, and earlier you were talking about your Korean pride kind of to support your family and whatnot, even when your husband could take care of you. Other than the familial like responsibility, what else motivated you to keep on seeking opportunities and whatnot in the workplace?
My family in Korea. Because they need my support, you know. They have, so I had to go work and looking for better paying jobs so I can send more money to them.
So other than your family though, so is that the only thing that
kind of... That was motivated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a big motivation point to me.
Got it. Yeah, so...
When you don't have, you guys have no idea what, how, you know, there's many nights when we went to bed really, seriously, no food. Because there's nothing to eat. When you live in that kind of environment, when you grew up with that, surviving is everything. So when I came here, I know my family didn't, my dad was always, he was a businessman, and he, when he was good, he makes a lot of money and the good, but then he also, a lot of times he lost all his business and we had nothing. So it was like up and down, up and down. So when I actually, I graduated from high school in 1966 and went to college in 1966 undergrad in Korea. And I graduated from the business administration. And then I went to freshman and sophomore, and then junior, I had to take over 2 years because my dad lost everything. He couldn't afford my the tuition. So I had to go work for 2 years, save the money, and went back to the school after 2 years later. So instead of graduating in 1970, which I should, I graduated in 1972 because of, there's a 2 year gap. So, you know, you always have to, yeah, the family was, I have to help them to survive. So that was my deep down motivation that I had to always aggressive, you know, advance myself. But then after Sally's dad is gone, then there was a motivation change to, I have to take care of my daughter, me, you know. So that when there is a need, people excel for themselves. Hopefully it's a good way, not the bad way.
Could you elaborate on maybe some other cultural differences other than the work ethic that you noticed when you first entered?
Oh, yes.
Of course, yeah.
When I came here, I didn't know anybody. My husband was the only person that in the United States that I knew. And his family is all white, Caucasian. And they were very sweet. However, nobody understand about the Korean culture. And the Korean culture before we came here, and you know, we didn't have an indoor kitchen. The kitchen was outside, always. You have to get in the shoes and go outside. So I always warm my husband's shoes by the fireplace outside the kitchen so he'll have nice and warm shoes. And he loved it. He loved the Oriental culture. He said that's why he married to the Korean, because he just loved the Korean, the custom, how they're taking care of men. So anyway, we came here, and my husband always said, you know, women wait for the man in Korea. So if he said, well, bring me a beer, I go bring me a beer. And if he said, bring me something, or help me something, I always, you know, I guess if he demands, he didn't really demand, but if he asked me something, it just, I feel like it was my job to do it. Well, I came here, and we stayed with my sister-in-laws for the first 3 months, because while we're looking for our own place or whatever. And they had a home, really nice home in the South County. And so one day, my husband came in after work. That was before I start working. And he said, Kimmy, oh, I'm so tired, go get me a beer. Well, you know, naturally, I just go get him a beer. And my sister-in-law saw that. She's 1,000% American. She said, Kimmy, I have to talk with you. So I said, okay, well, what did I do? He said, from now on, if your husband, my brother, asks you to bring something, tell him go get itself. We don't wait for the man in America. He's got a leg, he's got a arm, he knows where's a beer. You don't wait for the man every time he asks you something. And he said, now I heard that you always warm up his shoes and by the fires in the kitchen so he'll have a nice warm shoes. We don't do that here. We don't. First of all, you wear the shoes in the house, so you don't need to warm up the shoes. And so he was, she was, she was saying, whatever you did in Korea, forget about it. We don't do it here. Man has, they got their leg, they got their hand, they know where the stuff is, they can go get it for themselves. So she told me not to do that. And later on she said, if you keep doing that, her husband would expect to do the same thing. So she said, you just given those men a bad, make me, she said, I don't want them to get a bad idea about the me, I have to wait on them. So she said, stop doing it right away. I thought that was kind of when I look back. And another thing is that one day she invited all her friends to her house for lunch. And she wanted to really, later I find that she wanted to introduce her new sister-in-law from Korea to her friends, whatever. But in Korea, we don't really sit at the same table with the elders. You just don't do that. So when all the friends came over, and she had like a 5 or 6 of her closer friend, all women, came in, and then she said, oh, this is, you know, Bill's wife, my new sister-in-law came from Korea, and then, so she introduced me the name. And as soon as that introduction over, I left the room and went back to my room. Didn't come out. After all her friends left, my sister-in-law said, I need to talk to you again. I said, oh my God, what did I do this time? She said, you really embarrasses me, ignoring me, leaving the table with all my friends. You should supposed to be stay there, join the conversation, and because I was so proud of you to introduce my friend. But you just got up and left. Do you know how embarrassed that I was? And I said, oh my God. So she was really mad at me. So when my husband came, you know, from work that day, and I told him, I think your sister's really upset with me, and this is what happened. So my husband went out and talked to his sister. She said, sis, the reason Kimmy left your table and disappeared, that's because that's how the Korean custom is. The Korean custom is to respect elders. You don't sit on the same table with the elders. That's just a bad manner. So she just thought, sitting, they're not sitting there, just, you know, leaving the table was the right thing for her to do. She has no idea it's going to upset you. So she didn't do that to upset you or embarrass you or whatever you think. So we kind of made it up after that. And she told me, don't do that ever again. In here, everybody's equal. You can sit with my friends, and they could be 100 years old. You could sit on the same table. You just don't get up and walk. Because here, everybody's equal. We don't care. And you call your husband Mr. whatever. Don't do that. We call name. You call my name. She was, oh my God, she was about 40 years older than I am. And I always called her Mrs. So-and-so. She said, there's no such thing. I'm your sister. You call my first name, Tina. You call me Tina. I said, I cannot do that because that's very disrespectful. She said, if you don't call me and keep calling Mrs. So-and-so, that's really going to make me mad. She said, start right now. You call me my first name. And you call Vince, which was her husband. You don't call him Mr. So-and-so. So you call my name, Tina. You call him Vince. Because we go by first name. I don't care about that, how old they are. So that was another culture shock. So yeah, there were a few.
So when you came to America, how did you first adjust to learning English?
Okay. I went to college and English was a required subject in Korea. Okay. So, but after I came here, I knew how the way they taught us is the wrong way. Okay, because I figure when the baby's born, okay, they don't know, they cannot read the alphabet. You know, they were mama, blah, 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 and talk to this baby language and open your ears. And then when you go kindergarten, whatever, and then you start learning alphabet. Well, in Korea, we don't know anything about English at all. When you go to like a 고등학교 and you got in 7th grade, you start learning English as a required subject. All those English teachers in Korea, most of them, was Korean English teachers, which probably came to the United States and study and come back and become English teachers. We didn't know how bad they were because of the... Anyway, they taught us right away in the 7th grade, spelling, grammar, how to read, writing. Nobody taught us the conversation English. And I tell everybody, even there, says, you want to learn the English, start talking first. Forget about this, it comes later, okay? So when I came here, my husband was the only person understood my broken English. And he was like an interpreter, when I think about it now. Because his sister, brother-in-law, nobody understood my language. So when I'm home by myself, and now first time I saw the color TV when I came to the United States, we didn't have a color TV there. So it was really fascinating me watching the color TV and nobody here at home but by myself. And the phone ring and my heart just keep bouncing. So am I supposed to pick up the phone? Whatever if they don't understand me? What if I don't understand them? Because nobody had a cell phone there. It was all landline. So I just don't pick it up. And then the phone ring again. My heart was just beating so hard. Because I was so afraid of whether I was supposed to pick it up or not. So my husband came home and says, I tried to call you 3 times today. Why didn't you pick up the phone? I said, I didn't know whether I was supposed to pick up the phone. What if it was a salesman call somebody I don't understand, whatever. So we had the system. Following day, he called, ring twice, and then hang up. And he called back, ring twice, hang up. And third time, I pick up because I knew that was him. So that was the signal we had. And then, so every day I'm sitting there watching TV. I have no idea what they're talking about on TV. And there was a lot of game show. For example, like a Price is Right, and you know, that kind of a game show. And I'm watching, everybody's laughing at the TV, but I have no idea why they were laughing, you know. But I had nothing else to do. So I just, every day, you know, I'm watching TV. Just watching color is probably mainly what I was watching because the color TV was fascinating me. So I did that for like maybe about 6 months. And you know, funny thing, I watched the same game show and then there's two programs that I watched every day. Didn't understand what they're talking about. But they were laughing like crazy. But I just kept watching same program. You know what? But after 6 months, it's all of a sudden, just my ears pop. And I can understand them, what they're talking about. And why they're laughing. It was like, it was fascinating. I mean, I watched the same program over and over and over and every day. And then one day, I just understanding what they're talking about. So, wow. and then start reading this news. Now, we knew how to read because that's what we studied, how to read and, you know, understand. So most of Korean people come here, even 40 years ago, we knew how to read and we can write it, but we just could not share the conversation because that's not how they taught us. Yeah. And then, so I started actually been working with the American people. You know, nobody speak Korean, so that kind of forced me to speak English. And then after Sally's dad passed away, I was dating this American. And he is very, I guess, a high class, upper scale gentleman who happened to be San Francisco Berkeley University English major. So I started dating with him. By then I was able to speak some, but I still had a lot of, you know, slangs and didn't. So he was having some issue to understanding me. So finally he said, but he really liked me a lot because, you know, I was only what, about 100 pounds then, you know, working at the bank and have always a nice address, you know, the business suit. So he was very proud of taking me, his society, the meetings. Now, because of them, I got involved with politics and, you know, also he's the one really main person took me to out of the society and introduced to the American society. And he's the one. So he always said, now tomorrow we are going to some kind of a functions, events, or whatever. And once I go there, I introduce to the people, my friends, but don't just chase me around like a little puppet or chewing gum, just cannot get rid of it, because that's not why I'm taking you there. I want you to learn how to associate with American people, how to mingle with the people, learn this kind of stuff. So he take me to the some, you know, like a black tie, you know, dance, and then I guess I would have to say I was pretty, very size 2 dress with maybe 100 pounds. And so anyway, he goes there because most his friends, the wives, they bring, you know, girlfriend, whatever, kind of a heavy set, typical American, you know. And so he was very proud of me because all his friends said, where did you find that cute, you know, Asian girlfriend or whatever. So anyway, so he said, okay, I have to start teaching you the English. So he sent me every time, you know, when we're together or dining or something, he pick up the menu. He said, I want you to read the menu. You know, there's a lot of strange language, food, you know, names on this. And he said, now, put it down. He said, I'm going to say that, and you watch my lips. Watch my lips. And he said that, and tell me to repeat it. And he will let me repeat it until I sound correctly. Yeah, he did. And then I was, yeah, when I was working at the master's degree, I was dating him. It was very hard. I cried so many nights because there was nobody to help me. And it was so different than Korea. One of the professor was, I think he was a bank president or something. And he said, there was about five, I think a Taiwanese, the student, the government would send them over there to study. And they were very hard to understand, even my level. And this professor said, got nothing against you personally, but if I cannot understand you, what you guys are saying, you don't need to be in my class because I'm going to fail you anyway. So to save the money, I'm going to excuse all you guys. There was five of them together. Go back, learn English first. And then when you're able to speak that I can understand you guys, you can come back to my class. So anyway, so I was very scared of this professor. And then his assignment is always, okay, there's an assignment, you know, you have to create a company. It doesn't matter whether you success or fail, whatever. If you success, why did you success the business? If you fail, what was the reason? So minimum 50 pages, no double space because we were using typewriter. Word processor was too expensive to buy then because word processor just coming up. Nobody had PC, you know, I mean, I'm sure it was. It's just too expensive to even think about. So it's a minimum of 50 pages, no single space, I mean, no double space. I cried so many nights, I said, why should I start this? It was very, very hard for me. So I asked this, my boyfriend, I said, here's my assignment I did, can you check and see whether you can tell me whether I did it correctly or not? Oh my God, he read it and he just red light through pretty much everything I did. Redo it. Well, I mean, I did the best I could, you know, but he said, doesn't make any sense. Redo it. What I was really hoping for, that he rewrite it for me, right? But no, he didn't. He said, I can rewrite it for you, but then you're not learning anything. So just redo it. And then I had to go, I had to go to some kind of a meeting and make some speeches, matter of fact. And he said, okay. So he did write the speech for me, and we practiced several nights just over and over and over until that I read that correctly and sound correctly. Now, I have to say, we broke up after 4 years. However, he was really, he's the person to really, I guess, teach me English correctly. And without his help, probably, I don't know, I might be still broken English. My English is not perfect. However, I have to thank him for that. And you know what? I read a lot of newspaper, American, you know, English newspaper. I read a lot of novels. And the first time when I came here, I started with a kindergarten book, just read it. I mean, I knew how to read, but it didn't sound right. So eventually, you start reading the novel. Now, I love John Grisham's novel. I love his novel. He's my favorite writer. Sometimes it doesn't make any sense, but if you go back and read it 2-3 times, oh yeah, it makes perfect sense. So I tell everybody, now I know that a lot of Korean people go to English as a second, with the ESL class, they're not learning really anything. And you know why? I know why. Because in the classroom, you have to speak English, right? But as soon as they get out the door, all those Korean people, they speak Korean. Nobody speaks English. And then that's exactly why they don't learn anything. And I told them, and sometimes people ask, like your mom said, oh, how did you learn English? And I told them, yeah, if you want to learn English, whether read it or speak, there's only one way. There's only one way you can do it. Forget about Korean. Forget about Korean. And make an American friend. Now, they may not understand you rightly, but American people are very kind people, and they're very understanding people. They will try to listen hard to understand you, and they'll correct you. But if you go home watching Korean TV, Korean drama every day, reading the Korean paper, who cares what's going on in Korean politics? We not vote for the Korean president. What about what's going on here? You know? And get registered and go vote. Well, I don't know how to vote. I take a couple of people actually go practice how to vote in the St. Louis County, the election office. I was working as an election judge for several years, volunteer work. And they never go vote. Well, I don't know what to vote. I said, you know what? The Post-Dispatch come out the issue about a week before. They will have a special section, everything what we vote. There's the issue, ballots, and whatever, read it. And then go vote. Well, so my vote is not, oh yeah, that's what you think. You know, though, sometimes the people win election with a 2-3 vote difference. Maybe you could with a 1 vote. Maybe that could be your vote. So, I tell them, I said, you know, read the American newspaper. If you don't understand, use a dictionary and try to understand. And even the, you know, the children's book, read the children's book, it's simple as that. And then just keep advanced. Start reading some simple novel. And that's how you learn English. But if you keep saying, now I don't go to Korean church, but that doesn't matter, I have a lot of Korean friends like your mom. When I actually got into the Korean American Association in 1989, Mr. Kwon Sung-ho, Dr. Kwon Sung-ho, he was a president. I didn't even know Korean Association exists. So when 1990, President Lee Jong-gi was the president, he came to my bank. He said, I have no idea Korean woman is a bank manager, and how come we didn't find you? I said, I didn't even know there was a Korean society exists. What is a Korean society? And because I was not really, I didn't have any reason to really associate with the Korean people. Didn't have any reason because all my family is American, my husband's family is American, all my friends are American then. So he said, well, next year he's going to be a president of a Korean association. I want you to come help me. I said, do what? He said, well, since you work at the bank, I want to be the treasurer. I said, okay. So he said, we're going to have a Christmas party. That was in 1989 at the airport, that Stouffer, the big hotel. So I will invite you there and I want you to come because, you know. So he invited me there and I go there. Oh my God, there's about 150 Korean people were sitting there. My eyes got this big. Oh my God, there was this many Korean people living here. I was really shocked because I knew Yoon Jae-yong because he came to my bank when he came to the United States. And then there was a Korean restaurant guy, Mr. Che, he was a bank customer. So I knew maybe two Korean people, but I didn't go to their church, I don't go to their house, I didn't even know where they would live. So there was no reason for me really attached to the Korean community. So I didn't know Korean community would exist. So when I got in there and start going to the meeting, I have a hard time to speak Korean, really. And because I was just so used to using English, speak English and whatever, and everybody speak Korean. I said, oh my gosh. And then every time I say something, immediately I speak English, and there's some Korean guy, I can name some if I have to. They thought I was really stuck up, you know. You Korean, why don't you speak Korean? You know, we all speak Korean here. So I was having a very hard time to really start. I had to really relearn about Korean because my ear was already by then was just so used to English, English, English. I even dream about it in English. So that's the only way really, in my opinion, it's just my opinion. You know, I always said, listen first. Open your ears, listen to other people said, and then reading and writing comes after. Open your ears. That's why we cannot communicate because we taught the so wrong way, the English in Korea. And because when I come here, if somebody say, okay, my brain is immediately, okay, that person asked me, this, how do I have to, you know, I have to like build a dialogue here in my head, okay? And that's why you cannot have it. And then we say, oh my God, that person not going to understand me what I'm saying immediately. And we don't want to look stupid. Korean people hate to look stupid. So anyway, so I always say, just have an American friend, you know, and go to American church instead of going to Korean church. And then go and listen what they say. You know, you may not understand right away. So anyway, what else?
Yeah, that's all I have for right now. So
okay.
Thank you very much for doing an interview with me.